Thank you for letting me speak here. It's a joint work, ongoing joint work with Fyodor Malikov, and I'll report on part of it today. I start saying that everybody knows anyway. Over the last 15 years, there was an extremely fruitful collaboration between physicists and mathematicians, which resulted in serious advances in mathematics. Truth must be said that probably most of these advances occurred in algebraic geometry and symplectic geometry, but topology definitely got its share, and maybe not as much as it deserves. So as looking through physics literature, we discovered certain aspects of field theory, which definitely are in the homeland of topology, and I want to report on them. It's interesting to know that even the questions in this era have been explicitly stated for quite a number of years. So it's also amazing that nobody I know of looked at it before. So what in order to introduce the setup from physics, I'll speak a little bit in vague physical terms. My definition is by no means going to be accurate, but I just want to describe the setup where these questions naturally arise. So though I will be talking mostly about conformal field theories, in fact, most of the things I'll write on this blackboard would apply not necessarily to conformal field theories. And before giving a vague definition of what a conformal field theory is, I'll define an infinite dimensional Lie algebra which governs this structure mathematically. And it's a Lie algebra which is generated by the following generators, maybe it's M, where M typically is integer and M is half integer. It's supposed to be J. And I won't write all the commutator relations. I just write some I sort of need in this lecture. So the generators L, as you can judge from the commutator, form the Virasoro Lie algebra, well, namely its central extension, and the elements J form a current algebra, or which, in other words, the commutator is given by minus n times J n plus n. The other generators are not going to be used in this lecture, so I don't even mention them in the definition. A conformal field theory for me is the set of the following data. It consists from a super Hilbert space, and two copies of n equal to 2 algebra commuting with each other. I denote them as n2 and n2 bar, acting on this space. Well, in this situation, you would want to study various partition functions and various correlation functions. The important function for me is called the elliptic genus, and it is defined as, in the conformal field theory setup, it's defined as following. You build a generating function taking into account the parity of elements, which is a generating function of the following quantity. You consider the dimension of axis from H such that it's an eigenvector of L node, with the eigenvalue n and its eigenvector of g naught with the eigenvalue m. So you take the dimension of this space, if it's finite dimensional, and make a generating function using the formal variables q and y. And minus one to the f just takes into account the parity. If x was actually odd, then it comes with minus. So this is an important partition function, and it's called elliptic genus. And that's going to be the major the major character in this lecture. I also discuss a little bit examples of conformal field theories I would need, and those examples include the following. So the first example comes from a complex manifold equipped with a Kähler class. And it is also supposed to be Calabi-Yau, meaning that the first Chern class of M is zero. And in this case, the sigma model, what physicists call sigma model, provides an example of the conformal field theory. I won't even attempt to describe what the Hilbert space and those operators are, but one important thing for the future is that whatever they are, if you calculate the elliptic genus, and let me, in order to distinguish this quantity, is called the one which comes from conformal field theory, L with the appropriate subindex of the sigma model, is equal to the elliptic genus as we know it in topology. Well, of course, there is many elliptic genera in topology. I'll make later explicit what elliptic genus I mean. But anyway, there is a preferred class of elliptic genera preferred class from the point of view of sigma model, so that if you consider the sigma model on the manifold, its elliptic genus would be the non-topological quantity, the elliptic genus of the manifold. The other kind of examples I want to consider is so-called Landau-Ginzburg models and the Arbifolds. Again, I won't be able to say much about those here. I'll just describe the data which go into the definition. And the data are, you need a manifold. Typically, it would be just an affine space Cn and a function. And an application, in our applications, mostly is going to be polynomial and homogeneous. In the case when there is a group, a finite abelian group acting on this set of data, I mean on Cn, then the function f is supposed to be invariant with respect to this action, and then you can form, can do the Landau-Ginzburg Arbifold model with respect to this group action. So that's the set of data. Typically it should be abelian. What I can be very, very specific about is this quantity about the elliptic genus, and I will be very specific about it in a few minutes. So I'm pretty close to finishing this vague introduction. So now we want to look at the modular space of conformal field theories, whatever it is. And you can observe following phenomena in happening in this modular space. Sometimes you have a family of conformal field theories which form a line, meaning that they depend on one parameter. One parameter family of conformal field theory, and that is what physicists call phases. And also, if you like, you will be able to identify the mirror partner of this conformal field theory, family of conformal field theories. So together with this line, you have sort of mirror symmetric line as well. Well, what's important for us is the following. Whatever the theories involved in this situation are, definitely, if you calculate the elliptic genus for the elements of this family, and the elliptic genus for the elements of the other family, then they must be equal. And of course, if you know, if you don't know the answer for any of the elements of the family, then it's not particularly useful information. Two quantities are equal, but you don't know what they are. Well, it is really not always the case. In some situations, physicists has calculated the elliptic genus in a situation when they have phases and mirrors, and what is lacking is a possible geometric type of conformal field theories which can be involved in this picture, and that's where the topology can step in. So the situation I have in mind is actually of that type, but here I will be very, very specific. So conformal, oops, I'm sorry. Thank you. If you keep confusing me, I won't move on. So at this point, I can stop being vague and can be very, very explicit. So I will describe a situation like that, which fortunately involves the topological type of conformal field theory, namely sigma model, and the appropriate Landau-Ginzburg counterpart. So the manifold I'm going to be considering now, and you see this is where I'm leaving the ground of conformal field theory. So HM for me now is going to be the hypersurface in Pn minus 1 of degree M. So, of course, if M is equal to M capital, then it's a Calabi-Yau case, and therefore I do have an enormous conformal field theory. But the situation with the elliptic genus has been investigated by physicists in the case when M is not when H is not necessarily Calabi-Yau hypersurface, but merely just a hypersurface of degree M. So what can I say here about the data I described on this blackboard? Well, in the topological situation, I need to explain to you what elliptic genus I mean. So in the case of HN, I mean the following elliptic genus. So an elliptic genus for is just a specific characteristic number, though it doesn't have to be a number. It's a characteristic number of a manifold. So due to Hirzebruch, in order to define such a number, all you need to give me is a function which whose Taylor expansion starts with 1. So it's supposed to be a holomorphic function starts with 1. For that, I can define an elliptic genus. If this function is somehow related to elliptic functions of theta series, then the appropriate genus is called the elliptic genus. The one I mean over there is given by the function theta 1 of tau z plus y over theta 2 of tau z, where theta 1 and theta 2 are standard theta series given by minus I q to 1 8 e to the pi I pi z minus e to the negative I pi z times the product from 1 to infinity, 1 minus q to the n, 1 minus y q to the n, 1 minus y to the negative 1 q to the n. And of course, the convention is that my further in the lecture q is going to be e to the 2 pi I tau, and y is going to be No, I guess I call it Y, let me call it X, just to indicate that it's a different. And Y is e to the 2 pi I z. So this I want to consider actually as a function of X. It doesn't start with 1, so that is not a problem. And the coefficients are going to be functions in tau and z. In fact, this elliptic genus, let me finish the formula for for theta 2. This elliptic genus will be depending on the dimension of the manifold, either elliptic function, or I'm sorry, either a modular function or a modular form of 1/2 weight or something like that. So theta 2 is q to 1/8 times e to the I pi z plus e to the negative I pi z product from 1 to infinity, 1 minus q to the n, 1 minus y q to the n, plus, I'm sorry, 1 plus q inverse, y to negative 1 q to the n. And for practical purposes, of course, you can calculate the elliptic genus given by these functions by the following formula. The topological elliptic genus of M is just the integral over M. You integrate against your manifold. You integrate against your manifold the following quantity, the product from 1 to dimension of M. I secretly already assume M to be complex manifold, and this is the complex dimension of M, of theta 1 of tau psi I plus z over theta 1 of tau psi I, and over M where psi I are the roots of the tangent bundle, meaning that the Chern classes of this manifold is the product for I from 1 to dimension M of 1 plus psi I.
So what are the variables? In your definition of theta 1 theta 2, what are the variables?
Right. I just substituted, or I'm sorry, I meant to say X here, apologize.
What, my question remains, what the definition of theta 1 is, what are the theta is a function of two variables, what two variables?
Yeah, I'm just using this notation.
I think he wants you to write tau y after theta 1 and theta 2.
Yeah. Theta, oh, you mean here. It's tau z, actually. It's tau z. But for the sake of saving space, I'm using y and q instead of... So for practical purposes, you calculate this elliptic genus like that. This is actually known in the topological literature. It's in the Hirzebruch book. It's called the equivariant signature of the loop space, and it is supposed to be the index of the Dirac operator acting on the loop space of a given manifold, though the Dirac operator by itself may not exist, but you can calculate it, its index by the fixed point theorem. So what comes in is just a... Here?
Yeah, put a
J, okay. Which formula are you talking about?
The one you're pointing to, if you put
yeah, I'm just
on the left, ci times t to the i, where t is a dummy variable. Right,
yeah, well, I mean, you know what I mean. I just write it down as a sum of symmetric components, and every symmetric component is, well, admitted. This is an elliptic genus, which is supposed to be, as I said, the index of the Dirac operator of the loop space. And this funny series is nothing else but series which encode the information about the spinner bundles and the normal bundle of M sitting inside of the loop space on M as a fixed point of S1 action. All right, so that's the topological, and of course, that's the topological elliptic genus. Let me now talk about the elliptic genus of the Landau-Ginzburg model. Though I didn't tell you what it is, I gave you the data, and here the answer is completely known due to efforts of Witten and subsequent efforts of Kawai, Yamado, Yado, and Iguchi. So if I find in my notes now, I will tell you what they are. So the simplest Landau-Ginzburg model would be complex numbers equipped with a function equal to z to the n. Let me stick to my notations. And in this case, Witten has calculated the elliptic genera of this Landau-Ginzburg arbifold, and that's the conformal field theory elliptic genera of this Landau-Ginzburg, and it is given by the following series: theta 1 of tau 1 minus 1 over n times z over theta 1 tau 1 over n z. Well, that's the simplest possible function. What if you have the Landau-Ginzburg in dimension greater than 1, namely you have Cn and your function is z1 to m plus zn to m. I guess I should have put here m so to make it consistent with that, so I apologize. And I change the letter. So what's the answer? Well, the answer is very simple. You should just consider this formal sum as representing the tensor product of the appropriate one-dimensional Landau-Ginzburg models and the elliptic genus of that. Again, conformal field theory, elliptic genus of that is going to be just the one-dimensional one taken to the power n. Well, I'm sorry, it's theta 1. Yes. No, that's theta 1. I introduced theta 2 for a purpose. I didn't use it yet. I'm sorry. So that is the elliptic genus as physicists calculated, and I want to emphasize calculated using their own considerations in conformal field theory. Well, it doesn't yet make a touch with geometry, because what we need is actually to throw in the z mod m action. In this case, you can consider the arbifold of the elliptic genus model, and the appropriate elliptic genus has been calculated as well. And in this situation, I would like to separate the cases. Together with the two-parameter elliptic genus, I would need to consider one-parameter elliptic genus as well. And three. Yeah. I would need to consider one parameter elliptic genus as well, and two parameter elliptic genus and one parameter elliptic genus are related in the following way. So the elliptic of tau is equal to the elliptic of tau with z substituted equal to 1/2. So the elliptic genus of the Landau-Ginzburg-Abbe fold I would write in these separate cases. For the Calabi-Yau case, when little m is equal to capital N, I would need two parameter elliptic genus, and its Abbe fold with respect to Zn, and the answer is, and I really want to get these formulas on the blackboard because this is the formulas I want to report on. So the elliptic genus calculated on conformal field theory is given by the sum 1 over n capital j l from 0 to n minus 1 minus 1 to n j plus l plus z j times e to minus, no, I'm sorry, there's no z here, minus e to the minus pi I n minus 2 to z plus l minus j squared times, and now the major factor is theta 1 calculated at the point tau comma 1 minus 1 over n z plus 1 over n j tau plus l over theta 1 tau comma 1 over n z minus j tau minus l. So I want to point out, first of all, it's a finite sum, and the number of summons is twice the number of the elements of the group, and all of them are obtained from one, from the usual elliptic genus for Landau-Ginzburg, by doing a by applying a substitution into the argument, which is obviously of the Arbifold nature, and physicists know how to explain this Arbifold formula. So that is the formula for. This formula actually looks even more appealing when you do one parameter version of it. So if m is not equal to n, then I consider one parameter elliptic genus of the appropriate Arbifold, and the formula then is now I'm using theta 2. Tau was always the first argument, and here is tau 1, theta 1 tau comma 1 over 2 m, 1 plus 1 over m, j tau plus l. Well, that is even even better. You see that you if you remember that theta 2 over theta 1 is actually closely related up to some factor to the Weierstrass p function. What you do here is just sum over the division point of the appropriate elliptic curve. So that's the physics calculation done using their argument. But taking into account that, we set ourselves for solving a problem. which I need to say just two more words before what the problem is. So now, as I promised, I describe this phase and mirror picture in this particular case. The people involved, I put Witten, though it wouldn't be fair, the phase picture, the phase part of the picture was studied by many people, just, and I acknowledge that. And Hori and Waffa contributed to the mirror description. And of course, I'm just using them crudely without understanding what they do, but we clearly see the problem. So in this case, the phase contains the Calabi, well, sigma model on HM and the Landau-Ginzburg Arbifold with respect to Z mod M action. And the mirror picture, well, given by the same function, sum of xi to the m, defined over cn. The mirror picture is typically, if m is not equal to n, you should expect it to be, again, Landau-Ginzburg model Arbifold, which I don't even want to specify because it's already irrelevant. What we know now is, what physicists know now is that the elliptic genera of all that are equal, and what is lacking is the topological calculation of the elliptic genus of the hypersurface, which would confirm that the picture is consistent. And I guess the short description of this talk is this is a theorem, meaning that in the Calabi-Yau case, the two-parameter elliptic genus of the hypersurface is given by this formula. And then in one, in non-Calabi-Yau Fano case, well, the physicists specifically emphasize that M and N should be even for the elliptic genus on the physics side to be defined. And so that's the statement two. So let me put it as a theorem now. For a second. You told me that it's absolutely clear to you that all the elliptic genus is involved here. Right. Yeah, I am making the. So the theorem I want to state is actually stated. And I want to acknowledge the contribution of several other people to this, to investigating the situation of this theorem, namely Hitzebruch and Oshanin has made a non-trivial contribution as well. When N is equal to M, then the elliptic genus calculated on conformal field theory side is equal to the elliptic genus of HN. And when N and M are even, well, when then N capital is odd, then you get zero automatically, and the formula sees it, so it's interesting when N is even and little m is even, then this formula. So this is tau z, and here is the elliptic genus on the conformal field theory side, but only one parameter is equal to that. It's interesting to know that we know the answer when N is even and M is odd, and it's mysteriously again a Arbifold type formula like I wrote here, except that it contains twice as many summons. Here we're sort of circling around one division point of your elliptic curve, but there are two. So you need to incorporate the other one, and then the answer. Whether it makes sense physically or not, I don't know. But we can calculate. And of course, right, for physicists, it's also important that the degree should not be greater than the dimension. For us, it doesn't important. I mean, it is not important. No, the action, there is no action on the hypersurface, as you can easily see. It's just physicists tell you that this is the answer. The best you can do is to try to prove it. There is no arbifold on the topological side. That's the mystery of the formula. The pi one of this hypersurface is zero. There's no non-trivial coverings or anything. No reasonable action. But I will provide an explanation in what sense this hypersurface is an arbifold. The formula, as you understand, for calculation of elliptic genera is irrelevant. They're all the same, but well, I'm not sure what that was. Well, there is not an action I'm using or physicists are using. That's what I'm saying. You can, of course, come up with an action, but that's not a part of the picture. But the formula is, well, I can see the Fermat, but of course, as I said, it doesn't matter what the equation of the hypersurface is. What matters is the degree for the elliptic genus calculation. It may be, but it's not the part of the picture. Well, it's in PN. I mean, if you just scalar.
Yeah, well, suppose I scale only one
of them. Oh, yeah, I mean, there's plenty, but none of them is being used, at least in the obvious fashion. Okay. I also want to say that this is only one situation we investigated. In the work of Khoury and Wafa, there is an extremely intriguing, from my point of view, the description of the mirror partner for N. Landau-Ginzburg and the phase partner for the complete intersection. And it's not clear to me if whether, you know, it would be very interesting to sort it out. So right on the face of it, there is one more situation to look at. In the rest of the time, I want to, proving the formula was not our goal, actually. We wanted to understand why, in what sense, the hypersurface is an arbifold. I can offer today an explanation, or we can offer today an explanation. But before doing that, I just want to say, even if you don't look beyond the formula, these calculations, when I showed them to Hissebruch and Zagier, we were total surprise to them. And in fact, if you want to prove the formula for one parameter genus, it probably is not that hard if you know what the answer is. If you look at the formula, then and keep in mind that calculation of the elliptic genus for hypersurface essentially amounts to calculating a residue of the function which represents it. Then, given this identity, you see that proving this formula amounts to proving a nice addition theorem for the Jacobi function associated to the Weierstrass P function, and I'm pretty sure I wrote it somewhere. So if you call X of Z P of Z minus V1, then there is the following nice formula. One over x at the point m times z, so that's what amounts to calculation of the addition in the group law, is one over two square root of epsilon, where epsilon is the modular form of for the subgroup of index two of weight four, I think. sum of over ij minus 1 to j x prime z over x of z minus x calculated at this division point. Well, you know, if you try to prove it just using the usual addition law for Weierstrass p function, then it very soon starts growing, and Zagier did not know this formula. It does suggest that it's sort of kind of new phenomena it captured. It's this arbifold type of it. I mean, truth must be said, in this formula, I do not calculate the actual value of x in terms of, at the point mz, in terms of the value at the point x of z. I'm also using, you know, the values at other, some other points. But it's a closed formula. It contains only n summons. And I'll spend the rest of the time describing how one can take this one step up and see why, what's behind this arbifold formula. Well, again, I spent 5 minutes, maybe 3 minutes, given that the time is short, on describing what physicists tell us probably should be happening. So the structure of conformal field theory, as I described it, algebraically is quite messy. Actually, there is a work of Orlov and Kapustin in which they tried to put this data into somewhat like a closed algebraic form structure, and it comes out messy. It's hard to work with it. Though there is a counterpart of it, which is called the vertex algebra. And you may argue that it's still messy, but people have been working with it for many, many years and did a lot of progress studying them. So in a sense, this structure is much simpler than this one. So what physicists predict should be happening is the following. So let us start with our Hilbert space H, and we had this operators acting on it. Well, by taking a certain linear combination of these operators, you can cook up a differential, meaning the operator which squares to zero on this space, and take the cohomology, and then the result is going to be a finite dimensional space. And a lot of nice correlation functions descend to this cohomology, and that's how A and B model come about. But in 92, I suppose, Witten points out that if you take only one of these operators, which one, Q plus or Q minus, doesn't matter, because I didn't explain what they are. But if you take the cohomology with respect to only one of the operators, then the resulting space of cohomology is going to be infinite dimensional, but it would carry the action of L node and J node. Therefore, you can do the elliptic genus of this, and that would be the elliptic genus of the manifold in the case of sigma model. But the more important thing for us, it must be a vertex algebra. The residue algebraic structure from the structure of conformal field theory on this guy is the vertex algebra. So therefore, you can try to restate the whole thing in terms of the vertex algebras instead of conformal field theories. And part of the answer, or part of the picture, has been filled. Well, I'm going to be looking only at the Landau and at the phase part of the picture. So the Landau-Ginzburg part was represented as a vertex algebra in the paper of Witten in 93, as far as we can judge. And in order to finish this description in terms of vertex algebra as opposed to conformal field theory, you need a vertex algebra associated to the Calabi-Yau manifold. Well, and a candidate for that, a vertex algebra associated to a Calabi-Yau manifold, has been around for some time due to work of Malikov, Schechtman, Weintraub, myself, it's been introduced and studied. So with offers, do associate to a manifold, a vertex algebra, which I denote by VA of M, and in the case when C1 of M is 0, this vertex algebra actually carries a structure of a module over one of these n equal to 2 Lie algebras I described. Therefore, you can do the elliptic genus. So, in fact, we have both parts of the picture stated in terms of vertex algebras. Let me comment on this construction. I was fortunate to be in the meeting in Cambridge back in 2003, and I then reported extensively on this construction. So today I just briefly remind you what it is. So this vertex algebra comes as cohomology of a sheaf of vertex algebras defined over the manifold M. Well, local section of this sheaf is a familiar to physicists beta gamma BC system. And what this work was about is about the possibility of gluing this into a sheaf. The sheaf was defined locally and we needed to glue it into a sheaf, so we did. As I said, it's constructed by hands that in the case of Calabi-Yau manifold, you have a copy of n equal to 2 the algebra sitting inside. Therefore, you can do the genus. And to finish off the description of it, I'll tell you that if you do the elliptic genus in the sense of conformal field theory, meaning write the generating function of these operators L node and G node constructed here, then it's going to be the honest topological elliptic genus of the manifold M defined on this blackboard. So this sort of field, we found a candidate for this. So now we want to see whether we can see relation between these two. Well, as for the Landau-Ginzburg side, that really was done before us. Due to efforts of Fagan in collaboration with Semikhatov, they studied the Landau-Ginzburg vertex algebra. Well, certainly they studied it as a module over the n equal to 2 algebra. The R-befold of a vertex algebra typically is not something which comes for free. We construct it by hand, but as we are aware, there is no general way to guarantee that such a creature would be a vertex algebra again. Definitely, it comes as a module over the original vertex algebra. But in general, we are not aware that such a structure exists. But anyway, what I'm saying is that the top of this picture was filled before us, and we filled the bottom, and we need to see the connection. Well, the connection comes in a sort of unexpected form in the work of Fedya Malikov and myself. And it says there is a spectral sequence. Which starts with the Landau-Ginzburg vertex algebra. You know it. This algebra of Landau-Ginzburg R-befold and converges to the vertex algebra we defined for AHM. Along the way, since this generating function comes as a index or earlier characteristic of a certain complex, we can see that the conformal field theory, elliptic genus, does not change. So it's equal to the conformal field theory, elliptic genus, of this vertex algebra. Meaning that, you know, this function does not change simply because it's a trace of a certain operator where the sign is installed. So it's the same as Euler-Poincaré principle. But this is not yet a topological elliptic genus, and this is the first time we use the fact that, in fact, this guy is the topological elliptic genus of the hypersurface, so therefore we prove the statement about the elliptic genus. So it's, as far as I'm aware, this is the first time when the honest conformal field theory structure like Virasoro algebra and its partners do play a role in proving a topological statement. But we, of course, prove much more. This carries infinite number of operations, and there is a way to translate one into another through this spectral sequence. And maybe I'll finish just saying that this spectral sequence indeed models the heuristic proof Witten gives in the paper of 93. The Landau-Ginzburg-Arbe fold indeed corresponds to Cn with z mod n factored out. Well, it's a singular manifold. You resolve the singularity, you obtain the total space of the line bundle of degree n on Pn minus 1. So that has been interpreted and incorporated into this spectral sequence. And after that, again, for physicists, it's somewhat familiar procedure to cut the correlation functions on a non-compact manifold and descend them to the correlation functions on the compact manifold, namely on the zero divisor of a section of such a bundle. And Borisov in his work, and I mean, I should of course put the name of Borisov here, because the technique he's developed earlier was crucial in proving all that. So Borisov has discovered a mathematical analog of this descent from the total space to the compact space. It's done again by considering the cohomology of an operator, so which exists here, and we go back to Hn. So all these steps actually have been realized rigorously in this proof. And so that's, I guess, what I want to report about this work. Thank you.